This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning on this Easter weekend, Easter Saturday, right after a big day, big holiday weekend. And, of course, a lot of people out and enjoying. And, of course, looks like the weather's going to cooperate, which is even going to be better. Lots to talk about over the next 3 hours. Got more Mariner injury news, which is, of course, not good. Also have lots of stuff going on in football. And the phone lines, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with some headlines. Well, the bad news for the Mariners is Mike Zunino had to go on the injured reserve list, an oblique injury. It looked minor. They were very cautious about it, but then after getting the checks and all that, looks like he's going to be down for at least 10 days or who knows how long, as, again, another starter with Ben Gamel also being out. Erasmo Ramirez also being injured. It's been pretty tough on the injury front, and, again, losing Zunino, who had such a great spring, definitely going to hurt this team, but, hey, they come battle today. Cleveland Indians game two. James Paxton will be on the mound. Game time started about 1:10, pregame right after this show. In football, Thomas Rawls ends up getting a deal with the New York Jets, signed there. Seattle looking at quarterbacks right now. A lot of people think that they're going to look at Mark Sanchez. Hasn't happened yet, but they have looked at Geno Smith. More quarterbacks are signing in the National Football League. Matt McGloin, who was a number three quarterback for Houston, he ends up getting a deal yesterday, so he's now moved on, and we'll see how many quarterbacks are going to be left. There are still plenty of quarterbacks that are there, but you got to get some here pretty soon. Right now, the Seahawks without a backup quarterback. NCAA basketball today, 3:09, Loyola of Chicago going against Michigan. And then at 5:49 is going to be Kansas and Villanova, two number ones going at each other. UConn stunned last night in women's basketball in the semifinals. They lose to Notre Dame. Big shot at the buzzer, ended up getting that victory, and UConn number one ranked, now out of the NCAA tournament in women's. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton, how are you doing on a fine Saturday morning, sir?
Doing well. How about you?
First things first, happy Easter to you and yours tomorrow.
Well, thank you, and to yours, too. Happy Easter.
Speaking of that, that's the second time in 2 years UConn has been ousted by a last-second shot, Mr. Clayton?
Is that right?
Yeah, they lost to Mississippi State last year for a last-second shot.
Wow.
I mean, to have such a great season and always get beat by at the end of the buzzer in the semifinal, I mean, it's just bad. But you know what?
Sad.
It was a pretty good game. You know, I tend to sneak in and watch a little basketball, Mr. Clayton, but it was a pretty good game. So let's talk a little bit of football. I'm going to bring up three names, Mr. Clayton. Kenny Vaccaro, Eric Reed, and Bashaud Breeland. What's wrong with these guys that they can't get a job right now?
Well, Breeland, remember, he's a cornerback, and he had a job. He signed for 4 years, $32 million with the Carolina Panthers. But then what happened? He went on vacation and got a bad cut, and it got infected. And so he's not going to be able to do anything for 2 months. So this one's on him. I mean, he had $8 million a year in the pocket, but because of his vacation and the injury, he ends up blowing it. Now, the safety position, which, of course, is not Breeland's, he's a cornerback, has just been obliterated this year in free agency. In the case of Eric Reed, I honestly think owners are staying shy of him because of his protest on the national anthem. And that's a shame because he's the best safety on the market. He can play free safety. A lot of the free safety jobs are taken, so that's kind of watered down the market there. In the case of Kenny Vaccaro, the strong safety position has just been obliterated in free agency. I mean, it probably got to the point where Morgan Burnett, who I thought was going to get $9, $10 million a year as a safety, had to take $4.5 million to go to Pittsburgh. And then, I mean, you look at Vaccaro, who is a good player, former number one pick. He can't get anything. I mean, there's only like about 12 or 13 players from the top 100 that are still on the market. And, those are three that are still there. In the case of Breeland, it was his fault. In the case of Vaccaro, in the case of Reed, I mean, you can say maybe Reed is his fault, but I think that's bad of the National Football League teams to ignore him. He's a good football player.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's that's the way it is. I mean, tough, tough market for strong safeties.
Could you see teams eventually signing these guys? Because, I mean, to me, just looking at those three guys, they are good players. And they can be,
Oh, yeah, they'll get signed.
Eric Reed can make a defense. He can upgrade your defense.
Agreed.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I mean
No, go ahead on, Mr. Clayton.
What I would have to think is just a matter of time. You know, just a matter of time before they get something done. But obviously it's going to be, you know, I'm sure they're thinking $6-7 million, kind of like Tyrann Mathieu's on a one-year deal. Now you're probably looking at a one-year deal at 2 or 3.
Yeah. Matt, the reason I bring that up, and I know the Saints already picked up Kurt Coleman with the Carolina Panthers. I still thought Eric Reed was a better player than he was. By any chance, would the Saints bring back Kenny Vaccaro?
Maybe. I mean, if at the right price.
I mean, because he fits in the...
I mean, there really isn't a spot for him, but you know that Dennis Allen likes to use a lot of three safeties.
Was that Miss Clayton?
Yeah. If the price is right, I can see it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, another guy that's out there, Mr. Clayton, that I've been looking at is the wide receiver that hurt himself with the Chicago Bears last year in the preseason. I think his name is Weatherford. I think it's Rutherford.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're thinking of Meredith. Meredith.
Meredith. Meredith. There you go, sir.
Yeah.
And you know, he was their leading receiver until he tore his ACL last year in the preseason. Now, he's out there with a low tendon over his head. When he should have a market out there.
Oh, he has a market. I know he had 3 or 4 or 5 visits scheduled, and so teams are looking at him. But if you're the Bears, you can't afford to lose him. Although, the thing with the Bears, I still can't figure out. Okay, you've got a young quarterback, Mitch Trubisky. Probably did among the worst of the rookie quarterbacks last year. And so now you go out and you get him Allen Robinson. Okay, good. Good player. Uh-huh. One of the best wide receivers on the market. Then you have Meredith still on your roster. But here's the problem. And then you have Kevin White, who's a first-round pick, but he's been hurt for his first 2 years. All three guys probably aren't going to do anything in the OTAs and maybe the minicamp. So how are you going to get better with your quarterback if they have no chance to work with the wide receivers? I don't get that. I mean, the only thing that he's able to do is throw to Taylor Gabriel and then maybe, their new tight end. That's bad management.
My sentiments exactly. You know, it just the Bears, and then you're coming in with a new head coach also, you know. I don't know. I just don't understand their formula, what they're trying to do as far as that's concerned, you know, on that side. It's a wait-and-see proposition when it comes to the Bears, Mr. Clayton. You know, I know they didn't...
Yeah, one of the reasons that John Gruden stayed out of coaching.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that John Gruden stayed out of coaching.
Yeah. Yeah, they did a good thing. On the offensive side, is a wait-and-see proposition, especially coming in with a second-year player at the quarterback position to come in. Now, you know, another guy that's out there, Mr. Clayton, I'm pretty intrigued. I know he's just a possession receiver. He's not a real burner or anything. It's Jordan Matthews. He's another guy that's out there right now that I thought would maybe get a little bit of look at as far as being a possession receiver. But I guess people are not using the possession receiver in their offense as much as they did used to. I thought it was still a fine art to find a guy that could go over the middle and deal with that. Speaking of going over the middle, what do you think about some of the rule changes?
I'm skeptical on the catch rule because they still put another and plus words in football move, but at least it's a little bit clearer. The helmet down thing, I don't like. Because I think it's going to lead to too many penalties, too many stoppages of the game, and too many disruptions on offense. I mean, because again, you know, if you're a running back, let's say that you're Mark Ingram, you get through the line of scrimmage, you lower your head to try to barrel through a linebacker, that's a 15-yard penalty. And technically, you know, they phrased it so easily in the sense that if you make contact with your head down to another player, it's a penalty. I mean, what if Tom Brady, although they probably wouldn't call it on Tom Brady, you know, does a quarterback sneak and puts his head down and makes contact?
Yeah. You know, this is the thing about it. I think they're overanalyzing it. And I understand why, because of the concussion situation and all that. But the sport is such a physical, violent sport. And we always, when a running back is taught that, lower your pad level, put your shoulders down, and get through the line of scrimmage. Now, he can't, he's going to put his head down, and it goes with your shoulders. You know, I don't understand how you're going to separate that from that act. When Marshawn Lynch, like you said, Mark Ingram, all these big power backs, you're pretty much going to be penalizing every time they go through the line of scrimmage.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like you cannot make football safe. You can make it safer, but you're not going to make it safe. It's a violent sport. It's a sport of collision. And because of that, you're going to have injuries. Now, you want to try to minimize them as much as possible, but if it gets to the point where you disrupt the game, which I think that's where they're heading, then it's not good.
You know what? One of the better clean games we played last year, Mr. Clayton, was the Super Bowl when they sat back and let those players play, you know? And they didn't have all the tic-tac calls as far as the catching, pass interference, all the tic-tac calls. Now, aren't they also equating in the rule that the colleges use that if you get too many targeting penalties, you're going to be eliminated out of the game?
No, they didn't take it that far, but what they've done is actually gone further than the targeting rule. And what I say further is that, you know, if you target, then, you know, you take a replay and see if the guy should get ejected. But in this case, it's even worse because it's not just the targeting guy, it's everybody. I mean, just head down, 15-yard penalty, and now you're still subject to a possible ejection. And that, to me, is too much.
I know they got the rules committee that's doing that's implementing and bringing up all these concerns as far as that's concerned. But do
competition
they recognize
committee, right?
Some of the people on the rules committee are coaches, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do they recognize what they're doing as far as these rules that they're implementing that is going to affect their team also?
Yeah. And that's why, you know, you have to be a little biased when you do this stuff. But, to me, it's just, I'm just shaking my head at this one. This one is just, whoa.
Mr. Clayton, they just took out the running back. They're telling you you're going to pass the ball. And then also the targeting, now they're going to make you go more lower, make the defender go even lower. You know, that's subject to more injuries to the lower body extremities on a player right now. If you're going to make the defender even lower his launch, his targeting point to the lower body extremities. You know, I mean, I don't know, Mr. Clayton. You know, sometimes I think, Mr. Clayton, they need to get rid of that rules committee. Because every year they come up with something different.
This wasn't even on the original docket.
Implementing rules to try to make the game safer. You can't make it safer.
You just can't make it safer.
No. No, you can make it safe. You're right about that. I agree with you on that point right there. You can make it safe, but you can't make it safer. And does the owners sell off on this?
Yes.
Oh,
they sure did. Surprisingly.
Can the players' union have any say-so in that? As far as that's concerned,
they're consulted. They don't have an ultimate vote, but you know when they start to do the all the conversations, particularly at the combine, the Players Association is at least brought in and asked and talked about. But do they have a vote in this thing? They do not know.
Oh wow! That's going to be interesting to see how they call those some of those plays. You know, because equate that and call that. I mean, I think you're also putting the refs in such a tough position too. Because the referee,
Mike Carrera said, this thing may be unforceable or not able to work as far as all these. They don't know if they can enforce it. Hey, JB, got to run.
Take it easy, Mr. Clayton. Talk to you next week, sir.
Okay, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Good morning, John. How are you?
Real good.
Oh, great. Great, John. Did you have a chance to chat with John Gruden during the owners meeting, John?
Spend a little time with him, yes. It was good to see him.
Oh, good. You know, I don't think you were able to finish up your thought with JB earlier about why John Gruden didn't get back into coaching. Can you finish up that thought, John?
Yeah, and a lot of that thought goes into now when we're talking about the Chicago Bears. He's not big on the officiating. He thinks the officials take away too much of the game, and so he's down on them. That's why he's even come back and said now he wants to eliminate replay, which, of course, is kind of strange. It's like, okay, well, if they don't do a good job, wouldn't you like the ability to fix things up with replay challenges? But that doesn't seem to be in his nature to do that. But where I say that what kept him out of the game for so long is the inability to spend more time with the players. players. I mean, when you only have 10 OTAs, a couple of days of a mini camp, and then a very kind of light training camp, you know, he feels you don't have the ability to get everybody on board and get them ready for football. You don't get enough hitting with the offensive linemen, enough time with the quarterbacks working with the wide receivers. You know, as you know, John's a grinder, and you can't grind as well under these current rules, at least according to John Gruden.
Right, right. It's an interesting point, John. And do you think with the next collective bargaining agreement that the owners will try to negotiate a different result for the next one coming around?
They may try, but of course, what changes would the Players Association be willing to make? Because, you know, if their position is, well, we're doing less work because there's less money, you know, it's like, okay, well, give us more money and we'll let you do that. And right now, I think they'd be almost reluctant to do it. But there's so many different aspects of the collective bargaining agreement have to go in there. That's just one of them. Maybe it's not the major one, but for the course of the game, they really do need to allow players to do a little bit more than what they're doing now.
Yeah, I mean, John, it just takes away from the interaction that a coach has with the players. I mean, you've got to have that. If you can't talk to your players, for heaven's sakes. I mean, he's a new coach.
Right.
Obviously, he wants to get to know his players. And he's making decisions on their livelihood, John. He's cutting players left and right and adding players left and right. And without the ability to discuss, strategize, and to go over tactics, like, okay, where do you fit in the organization? This is what I see. What do you think? Kind of thing. I mean, it just doesn't seem right, John.
No, and that's just that's a trade-off, and you can understand the rationale is that, okay, we're doing less work. Because we're getting less pay, and that's what we'll trade off, and then maybe you can trade some of it back, maybe you can't, but you know, that's kind of the rationale that they have.
Yeah, and here's what I think. I think they're getting paid plenty good, John. And they should do everything they can to make the organization that they work for the best it can be on the field, and part of that is coaching, and part of that is having interaction with the coach, and you can do other things, but that interaction to me is invaluable. I mean, part of the reason why John Gruden was hired is that whole ethos that he brings to the table. It's not the data. It's not his win-loss record, although it's okay. It's not great. It's not that he's won many Super Bowls. He's won one. Okay, but he brings that ethos to the table about the Raider way, which is the fan base loves, the organization loves, and that's why he's there. And also part of that is, you know, building esteem within your rank and file. And if leaders can't do that, they're effectively muted from being able to do that. It's really a shame, John.
Yeah, and that's now the challenge that the coaches have, and unfortunately, that's not going to change, at least for the next couple of years. You just have to deal with it.
Right. Did you see they let go punter Marquette King?
Yeah, what a weird story. In fact, I don't even know why he went over to the facility yesterday. Maybe he was called, maybe he wasn't. But, you know, all of a sudden he's called in. Next thing you know, he was stunned by being let go for cap reasons more so than anything else.
Right. I also thought that was strange. He went over to the facility and they let him know. It's like, what?
Mm-hmm.
We're not getting the whole story there. And you know, I don't know. Maybe it's me, but maybe they just need to be starting to save money for Mr. Khalil Mack, who's coming along the way to try to sign him up for big money.
Right. And they got to do that, and of course, then they got Amari Cooper. You know, they spent what they've brought in like about 14 or 15 new players, so they've been very aggressive in that regard. But also,
right.
They have to watch the dollars.
Yes, indeed. Did you happen to see the comments that Rod Woodson made about Gruden coming in? I mean, a lot of it smacks of sour grapes, if you will. But, you know, he did make some very valid criticisms of John Gruden as far as his ability to coach. Did you see any of that, John? Did you read any of that?
I did not see him. What did he say?
Well, he, you know, it's things that we're both familiar with, John. He says, look, we just talked about them. You know, he's won one Super Bowl. He had a mediocre record after they won the Super Bowl. Arguably, the reason why he won the Super Bowl was because he knew the Raiders and what they were doing backwards and forwards, and he inherited a defense from Tony Dungy. I mean, those are valid criticisms. But again, I think the reason why Gruden was brought in is not because of any of those things. It's because of his demeanor and his attitude and what he does on the sidelines, which the fans love. And, you know, I think it's good for football to have John Gruden as a coach. Those are intangibles that you really can't put on a data point.
No, but also I think you can see so much of this was also done to sell tickets. I mean, not right. to Oakland fans, but necessarily down the line when you're going into a new stadium in Vegas. So I think that's where a lot of that comes in.
Of course, John. I think that's absolutely correct. Getting to the helmet rule, John, this is preposterous. I mean, I think that, and I'm glad that you and JB discussed it. I think Schlereth was the first one who proffered the fact that, hey, look, this game was never intended to be safe.
Right.
You know, it's a dangerous game, and that's why people watch it. That's why I'm a fan.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I played the game, because I liked the danger about it. And I was
right.
fully willing to embrace and manage the risk on my own as a player. And, you know, I think that to make it safer is a good way to go. To make it safe, no. And I think that they're
you're not going to make it safe.
Moreover, John, when things are done this way, when they're done quickly, as this seems to have been done, where this kind of came out of the blue, I mean, you were surprised, weren't you, John?
Yeah, because it wasn't on the agenda.
Right. And so,
I mean, they had the agenda of 10-player rules, and next thing, this thing came up, and it's like, whoa, where'd this one come from?
And
now, obviously, like any good competition committee, I mean, you have to talk about it. But, I mean, wow, this one just stunned everybody.
Right.
Hey, Raider Jim, I got to run here. So thank you for the phone call and have a happy Easter.
You too, John. Take care.
All right. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to David in South Prairie. Hey, David.
Hey, John. How are you? Happy Easter weekend.
Happy Easter weekend to you.
Yeah, I have a question, you know, about the upcoming draft. I know last year we had a lot of draft picks. We drafted about, 11? We had about 11 picks. And we had some really good depth.
Right.
You know, and I know Snyder likes to go back in the draft to get picks, but you would think maybe this year they would like to keep that 18th pick and try to get an impact player. I mean, you kind of got the depth.
Yeah, but also, you know, that in part, yes. And 18, I think you might be able to get somewhat of a impact player. But the problem is, with no picks in rounds 2 to 3, it makes it very difficult. And remember, it's like, okay, maybe you can trade a second next year, but the second from next year is gone. I mean, you know, they still need more than just one impact player. You know, and that's why, remember, it's like, okay, they trade down all the way into 3 to get, Shaquille Griffin, and he turns out to be great. I mean, he was one of the better rookie defensive players. But, you know, you're right. I mean, it's got to be a consideration. Let's say if the second-best pass-rushing defensive end is there, or they're the second-best running back. But, you know, it's still a matter. I don't know if they can fill the void in round 2. I'm sure they can, as they did last year, pick up several number 3s and then, you know, work something there. But, you know, they still need more than just one player.
Yeah, it just seems like I'd like to see like an impact defensive end. It just seems like when they've signed all these defensive tackles, they're kind of going back to 2013 where they want quite a few players to just kind of get them in and out of the lineup so everybody's fresh. They're going to do that rotation thing like they did back in 2013 and 14. Also, I have to tell you a story. I just had hip replacement back in September, and my orthopedic surgeon is actually one of the tops of it, but we were talking about the Richard Sherman. He was actually on a NFL medical staff 3 years ago.
And okay.
He was telling me that was probably the best move that Seattle did, was to let Richard Sherman go, because I've heard so many people say, well, why did we leave him go? He's still the best. And he was telling me the type of position he plays, that type of injury, and his age, he is not going to be the Richard Sherman next year that everyone thinks he's going to be.
Yeah, but sometimes, I mean, you can beat the odds because, I mean, look at Brett Grimes. You know, Brett Grimes was a cornerback, 29 years old, blew out his Achilles, and then came back, and he's had 3 Pro Bowl years. Now, he wasn't as good as he was maybe before, but he's still good enough to have 3 Pro Bowl seasons after an Achilles tear.
Yeah, but the odds of you're picking one person out of how many, you know, that could possibly, so the odds are that it's going to be like that, or like, remember, everybody thought, you know, with Adrian Peterson, how he blew out his knee, but it's like one person out of maybe 50 or 60 of these injuries has a great recovery, but the odds are that he's not going to be the same person that he was beforehand. So I think it's a really good situation of him letting him go. So, but I'm just thinking with the draft, I think, what do you think is the biggest need for this team?
Well, let's see. I'd say a pass rushing defensive end. I would say running back, but it's a deep running. back draft. I mean,
you get someone in the later rounds, like that kid from LSU.
He's going to be a first-round pick, a low first-round pick, and he would be a perfect fit for the offense. And that's why you got to consider him at 18, or if you trade down in the first round, maybe consider him there. So he could go someplace in that area. You know, maybe if you trade down to like 23, 24, maybe you can still get him. But, you know, it's still a deep draft. And the reason I put the pass-rushing defensive end over the running back is because it's a bad defensive end draft. And so once you get past two or three, there's a big drop-off. And so that, I think, would be more of the consideration if they stay at 18 or trade a little bit down.
I just like that kid from LSU. He just seems to, you know, we've signed a couple of offensive linemen, and I just think he would fit this offense with Russell Wilson style. You know, they run the read option stuff. He would fit it just perfect.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that I agree.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Bye.
866-979-ESPN 202. Chance to catch up on what's going on with the Rams. And Ndamukong Suh on there. Talk to Gary Klein from the LA Times next. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And joining us is Gary Klein from the LA Times. Gary, good to see you at the owners' meeting. Do you have a good time there?
You know, John, it was nice. The weather was pretty good, although I was telling some people when they asked me about that, I said, you know, I'm in the hallways of those hotels most of the time chasing general managers and owners, so you don't get a real sense of what's going on outdoors. But it was a good time, certainly a busy time for me with everything the Rams have been doing lately.
No question. Yeah, because I know that, because we stayed probably both in the same adjacent hotel, which is just a walk over to the main hotel where the owners were. And so I didn't make it outside in the 4 days I was there. Because, again, all your time is pretty well spent trying to chase people down in hallways. So what the heck are the Rams doing? I mean, to me, this is just major and fun because all of a sudden they're turning the Rams after 2 years where you didn't know anything about them into a destination place that could go deep into the playoffs, if not the Super Bowl, particularly with the addition of Ndamukong Suh.
I think what the Rams are really doing, John, and I know you've seen this over the years with the teams that recognize this, with Jared Goff, the quarterback, under control at a salary well below what the marquee veteran quarterbacks are making, they really see this as a window of opportunity where they have to strike. They have to start putting together pieces that can help them win a Super Bowl before Aaron Donald's extension is going to kick in at some point here, but before Todd Gurley and Jared Goff are making tens of millions of dollars, they're really trying to take advantage of this window. And so that's why I think you've seen some of these moves, although the ones for the cornerbacks, Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib, really make sense financially because they're under contract. And as you mentioned now, the signing of Ndamukong Suh for 1 year at $14 million, they're just trying to do everything. And of course, the talk of the meetings down in Florida was the possibility of them trading for Odell Beckham Jr. So we'll see what happens. But they are certainly trying to take advantage of that window. And like you said, make L.A. a destination for free agents and other players.
No question. Of course, that you're right about that because, in fact, I was just working on that before I started the show, you know, going through the teams and what they project as far as because you have your teams with the quarterbacks that are going to be between 10 and 15% of the cap, and there's 16 of those teams. And so now there's 9 teams that have very low percentages. Like I think it's, you know, Jared Goff's like about 4.3% of the $177 million cap. And so that gives you the flexibility for 2 years to be able to, you know, get these out. But after a couple of years, one thing happens: you can't start signing many free agents, and two, then you have to start shedding some of the young players that are going to be due for big contracts.
Right. It's a real process in the NFL, and for the average fan who just sits back and says, you know, why are they doing, I can't understand why this is happening, I think, you know, you've been doing this a long time. I'm still relatively new to the NFL. This is going into my third season, so I'm still learning how this all works. But, it, you know, it's the rosters turn over every year. Those that old cliche that general managers and coaches talk about, like when they address their team at the end of the season, how this is going to be the last time this group is ever, we're ever going to have this group together. It's really true, because it's not just the lower end of the roster that comes and goes, but when you get into these financial situations, you're letting core players go just because you have to maintain some level of flexibility.
Yeah, that's the interesting part about the Rams, because and this may be almost too too pinpoint, I guess, is that they had a great defensive line, a very good defensive line, and you can see they've shedded about half of the 4-3 that they did before. You know, some of that's just because of age and performance and all that stuff. I mean, Robert Quinn was pretty well dumped over the Miami Dolphins. Same thing with William Hayes, and so those are two guys. And that then all of a sudden, out of the blue, they find $14 million of base salary to pay Ndamukong Suh for 1 year, and now they have three number ones in the line, including a very talented five technique in Michael Brockers.
They really have made an attempt to, remake that defense with what McVay did with the offense last year. I think in their minds, they kind of made do with what they had. Wade Phillips came in, had a year to kind of assess what fits, what doesn't. Obviously, he wants cornerbacks, and so they went out and got Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib. And I think they look at Sue as that this is just kind of a bonus. Like, he's out there. They had, at least this year, the financial wherewithal to be able to go and do that. It's only a one-year deal, so it's not a long-term commitment. And again, I think this plays to that. We have a window. We have to do everything possible to win this year and next year. And so I wouldn't expect to see Ndamukong Suh there for a long period, especially with Aaron Donald due for a gigantic extension. But for the coming season, it's sure going to make it interesting, I think, for Rams fans and people who follow the NFC West in particular.
No question. And the idea, I do believe there's definite, I mean, of course, as you've reported it, so I know it's true, is that they definitely are being in the forefront of trying to do something with Odell Beckham Jr. But have you explored how that would work cap-wise for the future? Because obviously you can fit anything into the cap in any given year, but it ultimately comes with a consequence, because, even on the cheap, he's going to get over $18 million a year in some long-term deal. I'm sure he wants 20, but can you sustain, what will be Jared Goff once he gets his contract, Odell Beckham Jr., and Aaron Donald? I mean, that's almost going to be impossible.
And Todd Gurley. You got to throw Todd Gurley in there as well, because he's
good
coming
point.
Up. I think the Rams, I think right now with Sue coming in, when that contract is signed, they'll be at like $10 million under the cap. But going forward, in the next couple of years, they are going to have a lot of cap room. Just in terms of the way they structure their contracts, they're always front loaded. They don't prorate bonuses. They kind of look at it, it's explained to me, almost like a credit card. They pay it on time. They don't spread it out. So in terms of cap room, they're set up pretty well. And I think even if, they signed Beckham, let's say that scenario played out, my sense would be that contract would be front loaded for, the first 2 years, like a lot of these contracts are now. So that it looks like he signs a 5-year, whatever, $100 million, but really the guarantee comes up front. So, believe me, figuring out all the ins and outs of the salary cap, I can't say that I'm anywhere near an expert on that, but the Rams seem to feel that they can make this work. But the downside of that, or the reaction piece to that, is like you said, you're forced to start shedding players that you might not otherwise have to. But because of finance and to make this work for your core stars that are eating up most of your cap, that's the sacrifice you make. And you try and fill in those other spots with, undrafted free agents or other veterans that are taking the minimum.
Well, of course, and that's the one thing that's going to be intriguing, because, again, the great success, and they did a fantastic job last year. I mean, Andrew Whitworth, along with John Sullivan, they were great moves that made a bad young offensive line good. And so now all of a sudden, that pretty well, I think, puts the window for the offensive line for 2 years because, you know, can Whitworth play this year and next year? I know they signed Sullivan for 2 years, but you figure, you know, with the big contracts coming due that, you know, those luxuries aren't going to be there.
Exactly. And, you know, at 36, Whitworth, I mean, he looks like a guy that can play forever, but that obviously isn't going to happen. Sullivan, that's a two-year contract, but again, it's really front-loaded as a one-year deal with some big incentives if he can get to that second year. And then they got guys like Jamon Brown and Rob Havenstein who play on that right side. They're going to be coming up, you know, to the end of their rookie contracts at the end of the year, too. So there, it's just a there's constant change. You know, those times of, you know, of those defensive lines or those, you know, linebacker cores playing together forever, I mean, no, that's over. But I think the Rams really, on some level, if you look at this defense, they're following a model, you know, that the Seahawks did pretty well in terms of getting those core defensive guys, some really aggressive players, and trying to pair them with a quarterback that's young and under control. And we'll see if it plays out and if the locker room can handle all these personalities. Because to me, that's going to be interesting. You know, as much success as the Rams had on the field last year, that locker room was, I don't want to say serene, but everyone got along in there. It was like no problems in that locker room. And now mm-hmm. and they talked about how that culture, you know, contributed to their success. And now they've turned it over completely in terms of shipping off Quinn, Alec Ogletree, who are kind of cornerstones of that leadership council. And you're bringing in some guys with, you know, I'm sure I'm going to judge them based on how they are when they get there, but their history suggests that, you know, they have some large personalities, and we'll see how that plays, you know, in terms of that dynamic.
I was kind of intrigued listening to Sean McVay describe how they were going to use Ndamukong Suh. And obviously with a guy like Wade Phillips, you can make anything work because he's so good at it. He's got so much experience. And he, you know, really in a 3-4 defense allows a guy to be a one-gap guy as opposed to a two-gap guy. But I was intrigued that the first thing for Suh is that he's going to play the nose. I'm sure he's going to move around at different spots and match up against different offensive linemen. But kind of intrigued that, you know, he's going to be the nose tackle and that Michael Brockers is going to be the five technique along with Aaron Donald.
Well, as you mentioned, I think Wade Phillips, with all that experience, they may start one way and he'll figure out a way to best use them. I think you saw it last year with Michael Brockers was, I think by all accounts, anyone ever thought of him was as a nose tackle. And Phillips, you know, kicked him outside, let him have a little freedom. And play almost like an end spot, and Brockers loved it, and he proved that he could do it. He was very effective. And Aaron Donald, you know, same thing. They talked about being very careful when they were pursuing Ndamukong Suh about talking to Aaron Donald. You know, is this okay with you? How is this going to work? And they've talked the whole time, even from switching from the 4-3 defense to the 3-4. That Donald was really going to play the same position he's always played. You know, in terms of that 3 technique. That seems to be the case, you know, going into this alignment as well. But I think Aaron Donald has showed a few times when they've kicked him outside. He's certainly not a prototypical defensive end, but if you put him out kind of on the edge a little bit, he can give, you know, those tackles problems too. So I would expect to see a lot of experimentation by Wade Phillips. The funny thing is I don't think we'll see much of it until, you know, the season begins, because it remains to be seen whether Aaron Donald will even be in camp with that extension out there. And even if these guys are in camp, I can't imagine that they're going to put them at risk of injury. So it may be a kind of a similar situation to this past season where we don't know really what the Rams are going to look like until the real games start.
Yeah. I tell you one thing, I mean, sometimes I think luck plays into it. You know, luck plays into smart management. And honestly, last year you look at the smart management of the team, and here's where I think the luck is, and I don't know, you may not agree. I think they were lucky that Sammy Watkins was able to get the $16 million a year contract with Kansas City as opposed to them, say, paying him $14 or $15 million. And the reason I say that is that you see how Sean McVay coaches, and he loves to have decoys. He loves to have, you know, deep route runners that basically don't get the ball. And, you know, Sammy Watkins obviously wants the ball. But, I mean, he and Tavon Austin, you know, really were more decoys than mainstays. I mean, they're talented. Austin obviously got it because he took the pay cut down to $5 million. And Sammy Watkins, I know, always was, you know, not happy about not getting as many balls. And I think that they're better with those. But again, to pay him $14 a year now allows you know, them to bring a Sue in and maybe try to get an Odell Beckham.
I think you're right. I think if they had their druthers, you know, they would have hoped, they hoped that it would work out, because I think Watkins, after that initial early in the season, and it really wasn't started by him, it was started by Torrey Holt when he tweeted that he wasn't getting the ball enough. I think Watkins actually settled in, and for lack of a better term, you know, he didn't mind not having the spotlight. I mean, he was catching touchdown passes on slant patterns, but he wasn't, you know, that prototypical deep guy that everyone thought he was going to be. He acted more as a decoy. And ultimately, he got paid. You know, that price was going to be way out. The Rams did not, you know, they were hoping by tagging LaMarcus Joyner that Sammy Watkins was going to hit the market and it would be a depressed market for receivers. But based on who was out there, he was the marquee guy, and of course he went and got a huge contract. So I think, you know, they're not unhappy that he's gone, because like you said, I think it opened up some flexibility to do something with Sue. And now there's that possibility of Beckham, or, you know, who else, you know, I saw a report out there, you know, that the Patriots are shopping, maybe trading Rob Gronkowski, and we all know that Sean McVay loves tight ends. So at this point, I don't think anything's off the table with the Rams. They, again, I guess kind of going back to our first statement we were talking about, John, this window is small. It seems like a, mm-hmm. you know, a long time, a season or two, but it really isn't. And they are going to do everything they can to load this team up with stars as they get ready to go into that stadium, and they're trying to sell PSLs. All of this to me is related, but the bottom line is they see this as a chance to win now with a quarterback under control.
You see, I'm torn on the Gronkowski thing, and the reason is selfish. I was supposed mm-hmm. to get together with him at the Super Bowl, and then I ended up having a quick spin to do a Sirius Radio that day. So I had a one-on-one set up, and I understand he went to my high school. And so what I wanted to find out from Gronk, you know, because he grew up in Buffalo and moved to Turtle Creek right next to Forest Hills when for his senior year. And I got to figure out, okay, so you stayed at Jason Taylor's house. How did that all transpire? And also, I just needed the full details of how Gronk got down to my high school. So it probably would serve me better if they do get him out to L.A., because then I can at least make an easier trip down there to find out all the details.
There you go. You see, it always comes back.
It's all selfish, but hey,
that's
the way
it
is. He went to my high school, and I got no invite to the party boat. Hey,
well,
Gary Klein, thank you so much. It's always great talking to you.
If he ends up down here, John, you'll be invited.
Okay, that'll be good. I think I'll have a chance. I guess it'll be the party ocean liner now if he gets out there to L.A. Hey, Gary Klein, thank you so much, as always.
Thanks, John. Always a pleasure.
Gary Klein from the LA Times, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421 ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421 ESPN. Let's go to Andy in Redmond. Hey, Andy.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Good to talk to you.
Well, thank you.
So Gary, your interview with Gary was kind of one of my points, is they have a short window for LA to win the championship, and they're a team that's up and coming, and they've retooled. They're retooling kind of like what the Seahawks are doing, is they're retooling their going through the cycle of this, from players who are wanting to go for the money or are getting older and they need to be replaced. And New England is a good example of that. But one of the things I don't understand is pro players, what they're trying to do playing is to win championships. but we see so much of this is the elite players, they're going, or the players that are coming up, they're going to the money, but they're going for the money instead of staying with a team who's on the rise to win championships. So they go to a lesser team and they never win a championship. And I think through any sports, even if you're not a pro player, you want to win a championship. At some point, you're really playing at the elite level from college and all sports to get to the best. But why do so many players, they go to the money, go for the money, go for the paycheck instead of going for a championship, maybe taking less to be on a better team?
Ego. And, I mean, you could say it's the business world, and proper business is that you want to take the best deal possible, and that's the capital system and capitalist and all that stuff. But you're right about that. But I think that's where the ego gets involved, where it's like,
sure.
Okay, yeah, I'm good enough that I can go on a team and I'm going to make it a champion. I'm the best receiver. I'm going to take the top dollar, and then they'll surround me with the talent necessary to do it. I mean, you're right. There's it's the ego. That it's like, oh, I'm not going to be the 10th paid wide receiver or the 6th paid quarterback. I want the best. I mean, where you see a little of the unselfishness to a degree is like Kirk Cousins. The best money was with the New York Jets. Kirk Cousins then took, it was a trade-off. I'll take the shorter deal, 3 years at $84 million, and, I'll have it fully guaranteed. So he made a trade-off there, but he did take less money and went with a better team. So you can see a little bit of that, but you're right. You don't see much of it.
Yeah, and that's what's kind of startling. At some point, when do you price yourself out to where teams, and what, I break players into four levels. There's 1, 2, 3, and 4. So 1 is the best, 4 is, they're not the best in their position and stuff. So what's a better team, having 2s and 3s that are really good and work together and do that, or having high-played players and then the team can't afford the 2s and the 3s, so they have to settle for the 4s, and they just aren't very good. New England is an example of that. How many players on New England are the highest-played players in the league?
Virtually none.
Tom Brady? None, right.
No.
So they have really good players, 2s and 3s, and what do? They keep winning championships. And Seattle had that, and then they got priced out. Golden Tate, even Hutchins, when he went to Vikings, are going, why would you go from away from a team that's on the rise to be better to a team that's not very good? And that's kind of baffling for that. Is why players, you're trying to win championships, but so many of them just go for the money. And LA is a perfect
example.
That's
the ego.
They've got a short window. They're taking good players on the rise. I mean, Dominican Sue, maybe taking less, but how long are they going to do that when they have Donald having to, he's going to have to be paid more. He's going to want more money because I'm that good.
And you can also understand it because it's a business that can be one-sided. A lot of players get criticized if they hold out or they're upset with the contract, but they say nothing when the team breaks the contract by cutting the guy or coming to the guy saying, well, you got to take a pay cut. And so it is kind of ruthless in that regard, and that's why you want to try to get as much as you can for guarantee and money, because, again, you realize even your long-term deal, it's year to year. Oh, hey, got to run here. Great call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.